Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for returning here after lunch. And yes, we have the clock. My name is George Palokrasas. I'm a partner and the head of the Greek office of Watson, Farley & Williams. And today we have a very distinguished panel, many of whom represent some of the key regulatory bodies and industry bodies in the shipping industry. And we're here to talk about the regulatory developments and geopolitical factors affecting shipping. We have Mr. Clay Maitland, who's the managing partner of International Registries, founding chairman of NAMEPA and chairman of NYMAR. He also told me just now that he is a former chairman of the Hellenic American Chamber of Commerce in New York, so has very close links with Greece. We have Mr. Tasos Papagiannopoulos, who is the president designate of BIMCO and the principal of common progress. Mr. John Platsidakis, who is the chairman of Intercargo and the managing director of Anangel Maritime Services. And Mr. Nikos Tsakos, the chairman of Intertanko and the president and CEO of Tsakos Energy Navigation. I would like to start this panel by asking, making a statement, asking a question, because historically the shipping industry has been viewed as being resistant and slow to reacting to change. We're now in an environment where there are significant and continuous changes in regulations. And what I would like to ask the panelists is what the shipping industry and the organizations they represent are doing to address and shape the regulations we're seeing. So I'd like to ask Mr. Platsidakis first.
I would like to disagree with this statement. To the contrary, I believe that the ocean-going shipping is very fast to adopt regulations, because not only because we want to comply, but because we have to comply. I mean, we shouldn't forget that ocean-going ships are subjected to flag inspections, classification society inspections, and port state control inspections. So there is no way to get out of the system. So, and on top of that, I would say that because of the fierce competition that we face in the open seas, we have to fight for quality, certainly more in the bad days. So it's not an option, it's a must. Thank you.
If I may ask the same question to Mr. Papagiannopoulos.
I will disagree slightly with John. Because it is true that the shipping industry responds to the regulatory challenges with some delay. But this is not the result of reluctance or indifference of the participants. There are two major factors affecting the stipulation and the application of the international regulations related to shipping. First, despite its value for the economy and the consumer, the industry does not have the support of an extended and powerful political constituency. This makes easy for the national parliaments and the authorities, and the local and the regional authorities, to legislate unrealistic and sometimes controversial laws and regulations concerning the industry. Secondly, the nature of the shipping industry, which includes a number of different and very specialized sectors, makes extremely difficult the adoption of simple and holistic regulations for all the sectors. Within this framework of restrictions and difficulties, the main shipping organizations have consistently tried to adjust positively to the regulatory challenges, protecting the interests of their members and minding for the efficiency of the whole industry. To succeed to this rather cumbersome task, the organizations in which I have the honor to participate, the UGS, BIMCO, and the ICS, have adopted policies which can be summarized as follows. First, concerted efforts to reinforce the primacy of the IMO as the only international authority responsible for stipulating rules and regulations for international shipping. Second, specialized information and advice to their members, referring to the preparation, application, and compliance to the regulations. Third, lobbying with regional and national authorities, trying to influence their thinking by pointing to the special conditions of shipping industry and its sectors. Therefore, there is no doubt that the shipping industry has to adjust to the current difficult and challenging regulatory framework, and in my humble opinion, this adjustment, in the long run, will be beneficial for everybody involved in the industry. However, this inevitable and unavoidable adjustment must be, first, efficient and global, without impeding international trade. Secondly, fair, without discrimination against certain types of ships and operators. Thirdly, rational and gradual, giving the opportunity to the participants to comply and survive at the same time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I make a clarification? When I say that we do comply with regulations, I refer to existing regulations. Where we resist as an industry is that the upcoming regulations, that they do not have practical implementation. And that's why you see many times that we object, let's say, to the Ballast Water Management Treaty, to the implementation, not as a concept, but the implementation, the practical terms, many times do not have any reality to what the regulators are voting for. Just for your information, as you may recall, the Ballast Water Management Treaty was first adopted at IMO level in April 2004. Some 12 years, 15 years, 13 years later, still the technology is not there to address the problem. You can imagine what it was in 2004 when it was first adopted, and a number of other regulations. So we need practical regulations that really add value. Thank you.
George, if I may, I think I agree with Mr. Platsidakis. I think the industry needs to time because to respond responsibly to changes. Do not forget that ships are very expensive assets. When they are built, supposedly they are built for 20 or 25 years. So you cannot have structural changes on an asset in the middle of its life and then just be criticized for not responding quickly. So I agree with both Tassos and John that the industry is responding. Is one of the industries, do not forget that during our generation, we went from the single design of vessels to double without any subsidies. We self-finance a whole change of a design of a ship, but we had to do it responsibly. So, I agree that the ships are a huge assets, and we cannot play with the safety of the crew and the safety of the vessel by changing regulation overnight.
It's okay. No, but I think we have overall a consensus here. And until now, the position seems to be that the cost of adopting the regulations, and as we say, that there are many which have been passed, many which are coming into application, have been passed really exclusively to the operators. What is your view in terms of how these costs should be, where they should be borne, whether they should be shared between the industry participants?
Well, thank you, George. I'm, of course, a flag state representative with the Marshall Islands, and we, for a long time, advocated that there should be a much fairer and broader distribution of, frankly, liability, not just when there is a casualty or an unfortunate event, but really for all of the regulatory costs that we are all talking about up here today. One of the interesting things about, and George, you've actually opened the whole subject up, because the IMO for years has believed in channeling of not only liability for, in the case of claims for loss, damage to cargo, loss of human life, or the like, but for almost all responsibility under all the international conventions, the real burden falls on the ship owner. While it may be insurable, this has gone really almost without challenge I would say completely without challenge, until very recent times. The result is that when everything goes wrong, or even when things go right, it's the ship owner that is looked upon as being responsible. And this is something that I think must be roundly rejected and should be much more vociferously rejected at the IMO. I do think that the IMO has been very successful in being the international body governing responsibility, liability, and the management of ships. The problem may be that it has been a little bit too tightly controlled by a small number of governments, frankly, including my own real government, the United States of America, that do not have major shipping industries. Greece is one of the few countries with a loud voice, a successful voice at IMO, that does have still a great shipping sector. But most of the EU nations, have lost their shipping sectors to a significant extent and are still losing them in this massive recession that we're undergoing now. The United States has almost no U.S. flag shipping left, except the domestic fleets that operate on inland waters and along the coasts, the cabotage fleets. And this power without responsibility is a major part of the dilemma that we face as a result of regulation. And you may mention ballast water management. That's a classic example of a convention that was adopted or promulgated very, very much off the cuff, very easily, because it didn't cost them anything. It does cost. It's very costly to Greece. Thank you.
I think there is some misunderstanding in the society that all the cost will be borne by the ship, by the shipping company, the ship owner. I think people have to understand that this cost, one way or the other, if not necessarily 100%, but in a significant number, will end up at the consumer. Sure. That's why we have to be, all of us have to be very alert when we come, when we decide for new regulations of actually trying to see whether the additional cost that will come down to the society is beneficial for the society. Because, as Clay said, major political players, major countries do not have heavy invested interest in shipping. Sometimes this is hugely misunderstood. Thank you.
George, if I may say, I think, as John said, I think the ship is the easy target to put all the burdens on. And just looking on the performance, if you look at the rates of the last 30 years, I think we are on a flat line, and that's really a negative line because you do not have inflation in this. So we're really, the index is where it was back in the 80s, whereas our operating expenses have more than tripled from that time. I remember in the 80s we would run, Intercargo is much more expert on this, but I think we would run a Panamax for about $2,800 a day, and now you need at least twice that. And the market is exactly at the same rates unadjusted. So all the extras so far have been not shared by the other stakeholders, have been paid by the ships.
I think, if I may.
Yes.
If I can make a point, I'll repeat what I said. Shipping does not have a widespread political support. It is a business which is scouted all, which is diffused all around the world. There is no very big community in any big country, in any major country, supporting shipping, and therefore we are receivers of the decisions of others and the application of the decision of the application of the decisions of others. This is difficult, this is onerous, and we will try to do our best. But eventually, as John said, the customer, the people of the customer is the clients of the citizens of the big city, of the big countries are the ones that they are going to suffer. Thank you.
I would just like to add one thing. My first visit to Greece was on the occasion of Posidonia in 1976. So it was June of 1976, before you were born, George. And well before you were born.
I think so.
And what we are hearing right now, and this from this panel, and I'm sure we'll hear from you, was exactly the same thing. I can still remember the senior Mr. Papagastidis, Phrixos the Elder, rising from the floor and at a plenary meeting at the beginning of Posidonia, raising exactly the same points. How many more regulations are going to be imposed on us? Now, this was, you know, more than 40 years ago. Think about how much we as an industry have survived, most of us, since then. And I think there's a good story to be told about how tough we are, particularly how tough the Greek industry is. And how I still remember at the same conference, Mr. Chandris, Anthony Chandris, both of these gentlemen are long gone now, Mr. Chandris got up, and he was at that time the chairman of the Union of Greek Shipowners. And he said, we heard exactly the same thing at lunch today, he said, we Greeks have a saying, the sea gets sick, but it never dies. You've all heard that. But it's true. We've been through maybe three major recessions since then, and we've been bombarded with regulations, some good and some bad. And as an industry, we're here. I can't say we're all flourishing, but I think that the future, and I have to say this right at the outset, I'm more optimistic now than I was when I came here last year. And I'm much more optimistic now than I was 5 years ago. About that may surprise some of you. And it's simply because once you've endured, it's like going through a serious illness. You've gone through the serious illness, you're walking around again, and you realize you're going to live. Maybe that's not such a good message to give you, but that's the message I've got for you today.
If you survive,
until I see people getting carted out on stretchers, I think we're all in good shape. Especially the younger people here.
Be careful, we will be sanctioned and guaranteed with this illness.
We're going to talk about sanctions in a minute, but I'm not in Washington. We come back to Washington, that's where you have to worry.
Well, I think that was a very good debate. And some of the points which came out up to now is, I mean, that there is fierce competition, bombardment of regulations. Nikos Tsakos made the point also about, you know, the income being effectively on a flat line, but operating expenses more than doubling or tripling over the years. And Mr. Papagiannopoulos has made the point that there's no widespread political support for the industry. But I mean, given the way the regulatory framework is developing, I mean, it seems as though there's going to be further barriers to entry into the shipping industry.
Possibly, perhaps.
Well, we've seen it in Greece that there's a decrease of the number of management companies. Mm-hmm. But do we believe that this will be accelerated? Do we believe that we will see fewer and larger companies? And also, in taking the point about fierce competition, because of this, you know, the new regulatory environment, are we going to see that companies are going to be able to distinguish themselves from the competition by being compliant, by being ready? So will we see this sort of a split in the industry?
Well, I think we've always had that split between the great majority of companies that are compliant and that do maintain excellent records for safety and management. We are the safest industry. We are also, I think, the least expensive carriers of any goods by any mode that exists in the world. You compare us with land transport of various kinds, and certainly air transport, the shipping industry's record is wonderful. What I also think, and I sounded a little bit optimistic, I realize it sounded funny a minute ago, I think very strongly, we think, Marshall Islands thinks, that the British exit, Brexit, is going to have a very beneficial effect on negotiations on the IMO. I don't know how many of us here today are aware of it, but for the last 10 years, the IMO has been living under the threat and the pressure of so-called group coordination, where all of the European countries were obligated by Brussels to vote and act and speak as one, which put the Greek government and some other governments in a very, very awkward position. Frankly, now I think with the British exit, the fact that you're going to have a significant European country and a significant delegation, which is not subject to coordination from Brussels. I'm speaking rather cynically, I realize, but I think that it's a very important thing to realize that this is changing. The name of the game in negotiations at the IMO is going to be very different now. In fact, it already is very different. And politically, and I'm the politician on this panel. I'm here to talk to you about taxation and sanctions and things like that. But I think, talking about the IMO, I think that there must be some big sighs of relief in the Greek government delegation now because of what's happening with the British exit. And that may, as you all know, as we know, may not be the end of the story. There may be other countries that are going to move at least in the general direction also. Whether they do, in fact, vote themselves out is a different question.
Is there anyone who would like to say some words on this?
That really knocked them flat.
Certainly, yes. More regulations make it more difficult for newcomers, but I don't think necessarily that regulations will decrease the number of shipping companies. The fact that we saw so many companies coming up into action in Greek shipping was not happened during a very regulatory period. It's a matter of the freight market, I think, that at the end of the day makes the difference.
I agree. Absolutely right. I think that's correct. And I think that as we pull out of this tremendous recession that we're in, and I'm confident we will, we're starting already, I think, you will see green shoots, as they say, on the Acti Maoli. You're going to see a lot more entry from new companies and the offshoots of old companies.
George, if I may say so, I think on the tanker side, I agree that perhaps it's not the regulations, but I would say the risks that you need to run and the very close communication and oversee of the charterers has made it harder for smaller companies to participate. And I don't believe this is right, because I believe many small companies sometimes run a much tighter ship by being able to control their assets better, but this is a fact of life. The other situation is that I would say, and this is a good development, that a lot of private equity money or non-core shipping money came in the industry. They thought they were all dazzled by the industry's aura. When they came and they lost a lot of money, they also left. So I think that's why we're seeing less players, at least on the tanker side.
All the other speakers have mentioned correctly, I believe, the detrimental effects of the regulations, and they have done very, very. This is correct, but the regulations will give the opportunity to the real experts in shipping to prove themselves. And I have a lot of confidence in the Greek operators that they will raise to the task. They will face these difficulties and will increase their competitive edge. This is, let's say, the positive aspect of the regulations. On the other hand, of course, there are all the other negatives that we have already mentioned.
We still have to answer two questions. One is, will interest rates go up? Because with ballast water management and I believe the scrapping or the replacement of a significant amount of tonnage, particularly dry and liquid bulk, we are going to have to finance new fleets and new ships. This morning we heard a number of people jovially say that they hoped that the banks wouldn't start lending again. And while that may be true because of the fearful lesson that the industry has been taught by overtonnaging over the last 10, 15 years, the fact is that we are going to have to replace a lot of now obsolete tonnage thanks to regulations such as the Ballast Water Convention. Where is that money going to come from? If interest rates shoot up, there will be problems. However, it depends on who you talk to. There are a lot of people who feel, and there's a conference going on, and actually there's supposed to be a press conference today in Washington. We don't necessarily think that interest rates are going to shoot up. So the cost of money may still be relatively cheap. This, you know, depending on who we talk to, may be good news or it may be bad news. We may go into another cycle of overtonnaging. But there is no question that there is going to have to be a lot of replacement of tonnage, one way or another. Now, the second thing which we've all been talking about is taxation of shipping, particularly the pressures that are being exerted by the EU against Greece. What is going to happen to the Greek shipping community if Law 89, my numbers, you can tell I'm a lawyer. I don't know the numbers. I'm dyslexic when it comes to numbers. Law 89, is that going to last? Are tax benefits, is the favorable tax treatment of shipping going to continue here, which we hope it will? I think it's essential that Law 89 be maintained. But you may know the answer to that, George. I don't know.
Well, I don't have a crystal ball. What I can say is that there seems to be, over the years, a statement before that there's no political support for shipping on a global basis. I would say that over the years there has been strong political support for the shipping industry by whichever color of Greek government, and that seems to be the case.
Absolutely.
And that's, you know, and I remember actually this was a year ago, 13 months ago, I was getting on the plane to go to London, and I was reading a Greek newspaper which had two headings, sort of mini headings. One was that the then Minister of Shipping was talking about how important it was to maintain the competitiveness of the Greek shipping industry, and that we will do nothing to harm that. And then there was another minister who was at that point complaining about the farmers holding the government to blackmail, so that, which was interesting given the philosophy of the current government. But I'd like to ask the other panelists as well, because now Clay took over the role of moderator as well, given that they commentate. So I'd like to ask you as well.
Something on what Mr. Maitland said. Currently, the fleet is pretty young. It has been. We had a lot of deliveries the last few years of very young and very efficient ships. Therefore, I believe that our major question is not how to replace the ships, the existing ships, the existing fleet, which is fairly young, I repeat, but how we can run it more effectively and profitable for the companies. Therefore, I do not share, Mr. Medland, this view. We don't need to replace ships. We have to help the existing ships to provide their services more efficiently, more economically, and in the benefit of everybody involved.
I'm very interested to hear this. I'd love to know how that's going to happen.
I think Mr. Tsakos probably would like to know that too.
Clay, thank you very much for the statement about the competitiveness of and the free tax environment of Greek shipping. I have to totally disagree. In the 80s, there was a very well-respected shipping magazine. I was born in the 80s, actually, Clay. It was called Lloyd's Shipping Economist.
Oh, yes.
I will never forget, it was a left page. At the top, it was Greek shipping, the most heavily taxed shipping in the world. Because at the very bottom of the recession in shipping at the time, Greek ships, Greek flagships, were paying tonnage tax. Okay. Of course, over the years, tonnage tax, being a Greek invention, has been adopted by most countries, so it doesn't apply. But where do we stand today? I think Greek shipping is still most heavily taxed shipping. because not only the Greek flag vessels pay the Greek tonnage tax, mm-hmm. but also we have come to agreement with our government for all managed ships out of Greece, and we're talking about well in excess of 3,500 ships versus some 750 under the Greek flag. So all these ships, 3,500 ships, do pay the Greek tonnage tax, although they don't fly the flag. And on top of that, for the last 3 years, we, all ships, pay double tonnage tax because they want to assist the Greek problem. So in terms of tonnage tax, we pay a lot. And actually, I remember once I did a very brief calculation. A German flag Capesize ship, without counting the double taxation, pays in excess of one-third of the Greek tonnage tax. So there is no preferential treatment. To the contrary, the problem with Greek shipping is twofold. First of all, because it has proved over the years that being hugely competitive, it goes well. As an industry, no matter what, either if the freight market is up or down, Greek shipping has the power to move on. So there is a question mark of how do they do it. We don't do it because of taxation. To my opinion, the only explanation is because this is what we know best. And because we have the so-called hands-on management versus to the corporate management that we come across in other countries. The Greek tax system is very transparent. The shipping system is extremely transparent. And that gives the benefit to some outsider without really understanding the real details of global shipping to say, ah, that's the reason. When you come to study the tax system of other flags, it's very complicated. At the end of the bottom, it's much, much more favorable for them. As you know, under European law, it's free for every European ship owner to come to Greece and fly the Greek flag. Have you seen any? None. Why? Is it so good that they don't want to take advantage of it? No, because it doesn't suit them. Thank you.
I'm not going to suggest that the Marshall Islands flag has a tonnage tax. Mm. Last time I checked, it didn't.
We do them a favor, so when they pay the additional Greek tonnage tax, we deduct what they paid in Marshall Islands.
Thank you.
Well, if we can just move on from in terms of the regulations, I mean, we've to look at really the geopolitical environment that shipping, not just shipping, but in this case particularly shipping, has to operate in, because you know, we are seeing now a backlash across the world to globalization, mm-hmm. a move towards protectionism, and this is, you know, there's lots of evidence of this. The Brexit vote, then we have the election of President Trump, and we're also seeing the issues which are being fought over in the upcoming European elections in Holland, France, and Germany. And at the same time, we're in an environment where there are sanctions in place, and there's question marks as to whether those sanctions will be extended. And I just wanted to ask the panelists here to with their view as to how they view these challenges for shipping and how they view that shipping will overcome these challenges.
You want me to start off? All right. I think that we have no idea and cannot make, I certainly cannot predict what the United States is going to do with its sanctions regime, as distinct from the United Nations global sanctions regime. And I certainly can't predict what's going to happen with regard to either sanctions against Russia because of the events, the seizure of Crimea, or in the case of Iran, whether there's going to be any change. My own, if I were a gambler, I would say it's likely that I would wager that things will more or less be kept as they are. I don't think that that problem is the one that we should be looking at very closely. I think we should be looking at another country that is being sanctioned that very seldom gets mentioned here, which is North Korea. Because I think there is a real danger of some kind of an incident between the Americans, the United States, and the North Korean government, possibly of a relatively minor nature at sea, but one that will lead to at least some kind of shooting war. My experience, which is not a very good experience because I don't go back that far, but I remember when the Suez Canal was closed in 56, I was alive then, and in 1967, rates went up. I'm not saying that military events in the Pacific would lead to rates going up, but there would probably be a precipitate drop. But then after that, and things stabilized, there would be probably a greater demand for sea transport, including, believe it or not, container tonnage. Now, this is a very wild prediction, and I realize most people don't think in those terms. But the situation in the Far East and Western Pacific is very unstable right now, more than I think is realized, because if only because we don't know what the United States reaction might be or will be. And we don't also know what North Korea is doing with its growing nuclear capabilities. That might be looked back upon years from now or years from then as having been part of the revival of shipping, ironically enough. I don't say that with any great joy or glee, but because that kind of bad news very often turns out to be good news for the global shipping sea transport sector. That's been our experience since World War II. It certainly wasn't our experience during World War II. Everyone knows that. But there are a lot of unknown unknowns or barely suspected unknowns in what might happen in the next few years. I rather think that sanctions are not going to change much. It's just a personal opinion, strictly a personal opinion, over the next few years. I don't think that Mr. Trump is going to lift sanctions on Russia. I may be proven very, very wrong within the next few days, but I think that his arm is being twisted now to leave things as they are. And the precipitate sacking of General Flynn the other day may be just a small straw in that wind, if you know what I mean. But I think that there is now a lot of pressure being exerted within and outside this rather unusual administration we have in the United States to keep things as they are. That's for what it's worth, George. I apologize.
Okay, thank you. Well, I think a closure of the Suez Canal, even for a long repair period, would be very, very welcome from everybody in the room, or I would say delays on deliveries of new buildings in South Korea because of some problems with North Korea. So those factors, I think, could be good for the market. However, I think we in Greece, we produce, as we've said a lot, very little. The only oil we produce is olive oil, so it's not enough to even carry in one VLCC. So we are actually the truck drivers of the seas. So free trade is what makes us flourish.
Yes.
So the less the sanctions and the less the barriers and the protectionism, the much better is for our trade. Geopolitical events, of course, as you said, could trigger better markets. We have seen examples where actually the whole market has been moved up because of sanctions. You have some small owners from different locations that would break or intervene into sanctions for a much larger hire, and that at the end of the day moves into the normal market. But we do not encourage breaking sanctions. What we're saying is let's try to avoid any commercial barriers for our business.
I think the other thing to mention is the fact that the United States has now abandoned the Trans-Pacific Agreement, which may in one way benefit us, because I think it will benefit China, and I think China is increasing its output again, and I think it's also increasing its imports of basic commodities such as iron ore, and that's good news for the world, for certainly the world of shipping. I hold out perhaps a frail hope that the United States will not go ahead with the imposition of tariffs The last time the Americans did this was right before the great crash of 1929, and it helped to bring it on. That was the infamous Smoot-Hawley tariff. Some of you may have heard of it. There is a lot of pressure, again, not to let that happen, notwithstanding the speculation in the media.
But sanctions always existed, and I don't have any doubt that they will continue to exist in the future. And we shouldn't forget that a tariff war is more or less, at the end of the day, as equal as sanctions. And I would agree with, I think it was Clay, who said that shipping benefits out of free trade. But in sanctions, we have to remember that a number of industries suffer. It's not only shipping. Shipping is one of the ones bearing the problem. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. I mean, we have come to the end of our time. I don't know, Nicholas, do we open it to the floor, or do we...
Are the 40 minutes over?
Yes.
If you don't mind...
No, we don't. But I'd like to thank all the panelists for their views and for sharing them with everyone, and wish you a good continuation.